Welcome to show number 45 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. Hello and welcome to the Sports Card Show. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a lot to talk about, got a great show lined up for everybody today. In terms of product previews, really only one thing coming out at the beginning of this month, or actually next week, Wednesday, March 10th, Panini Studio Basketball is coming out, so we'll talk about that. Really, this month is kind of weighted toward the end of the month. We've got Exquisite Football coming out, 2010 Press Pass Football with a Tim Tebow exclusive, if you didn't catch that bit of news. Press Pass signed Tim Tebow to an exclusive deal, which really just locks him up away from Sage. So if you're interested in Tim Tebow products, you'll probably want to look more for the Press Pass offerings. And SB Authentic Hockey comes out at the end of this month, so be sure to check in later with us. We'll talk about those sets on a future show. For next show, there'll be some baseball. 2010 Topps Pro Debut Baseball comes out toward the middle of this month, and we'll talk about that. But today's show, we're going to be talking about Panini Studio Basketball. Other topics, I got a great email from Ollie from Chicago, originally from Chicago, is actually in Europe now. Wanted to talk about the game used market, cutting up jersey cards, kind of collecting game used memorabilia and things like that. So we'll talk about that. And if you listened to our last show, you heard the interview with my brother from sportscardreport.info. And we have lots of news on the Upper Deck case, which was settled with the Major League Baseball, and it affects Upper Deck tremendously, affects Tops, and affects the way baseball cards and probably some other sets and things like that will be produced in the future. So we'll definitely have an Upper Deck courtroom battle update, and that's probably the topics we'll touch on today. After this very short break, all this music comes from, as you know, if you're a loyal listener, I enjoy American Idol. And so most of the songs, I think on the last show, show number 44, were sung by either a guy or a girl contestant. And same with this week. So if you hear some familiar songs, they're from American Idol on Fox. We'll be back after this.
Touch of your hand makes my pulse react. That it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl, opposites attract. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than.
Back, time to talk about Panini Studio Basketball, which comes out Wednesday, March 10th. Expect to pay about $75 to $80 per box. I actually have the complete checklist over at sportscardradio.com. Find the sports card directory, and you'll find our product preview pages and things like that in there. And Panini Studio Basketball, again, it should run you about $75, $80 a box. There's 24 packs per box, 5 cards per pack. Supposed to remind you of previous, I guess, Donruss Studio edition cards, but I didn't see too much similarity. The rookie cards and the base cards definitely look like some old studio designs of the past, but all in all, a fairly nice set. You get 4 autographs or memorabilia cards per box, at least one autograph, so you're at least going to get one autograph. And in terms of the autographs in the set, seems to be there's a little bit more on-card autographs. I know people were complaining about, especially Kobe Bryant's sticker autographs. That seems a little bit confusing to me, but every Kobe Bryant card is on card, and I think Panini got the message and for the most part throughout the rest of their sets. I'm sure most of Kobe's stuff is going to be on card. The rookie cards appear to be some insert cards and things like that that do look like they have some on card signatures of some older Hall of Fame legendary NBA players, and of course of some NBA players as well. You get 8 rookies per box. And there's various versions. There's going to be your autograph version. There's going to be your base versions. The autographs are serial number out of 199 or less. One per case. You're going to get either Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, Blake Griffin, Elvin Hayes, Isaiah Thomas, or Jerry West. So one per case is going to have a hit of one of those players autographed, and all of those cards I believe to be on card as well. Most of the major hits appear to be on card autographs. In terms of the rookies, obviously with Blake Griffin going down, it obviously kind of tainted his rookie season. We'll see what happens next season for him and how he recovers from his knee injury. But in terms of this year, there's still some really nice cards to collect. Stephen Curry from Golden State has been playing tremendously in terms of just putting up baskets and scoring points and getting on the stat sheet. I think he has a tremendous career ahead of him. Maybe not quite as similar to Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is an outstanding, exceptional basketball player, and I don't know if Curry is there yet, but he does fill it up, and he did in college, kind of similar to Durant. So those kind of stat lines tend to do well for cards, so I like his prospects going forward. Obviously, Tyreke Evans, we've talked about him quite a bit on the show. He's been playing well, and I kind of like his rookie cards. And Brandon Jennings took the stage earlier in the year when he dropped all those points in a game, and is somewhat quieted recently, but still a solid pick. And there's quite a few other kind of mid-range players in here. Hansborough, Omar Caspery. There's just quite a few not very great rookies in here pan out in the NBA. There's very few players that are coming out in their rookie season, especially the last few years, that come out and just dominate. I mean, even Kevin Durant, although he had a great rookie season, you're seeing how well he has developed in his second, third, and fourth years in the NBA and things like that. So you want to give some of these rookies time. Some of them, the better inserts have to be the Heritage autographs. All the autographs in this set are numbered to 249 or less. There's also a jersey parallel that are also numbered to 249 or less. You're going to find Magic Johnson autographs in here. Rick Barry, Jerry West, Isaiah Thomas is in this set. Sam Perkins, that's an old Lakers and Seattle Sonics player. Robert Parrish is in here. Spencer Haywood. Lots of old players, obviously, with Heritage being the name of the set. It's all retired players. So that's a cool set if you're into Hall of Fame basketball players. Master Strokes cards. I guess these are guys that fill it up on the stat sheet or on the scoreboard, although I see Jason Kidd on here. But for the most part, I see O.J. Mayo, Paul Pierce, Kevin Durant, Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony. Those are all master strokers, in my opinion. There's some autograph parallels in here. With Panini, what for the most part, it looks like with this set, and what I hate about some sets, is they make base cards and they make these insert cards with the intention of having a jersey piece put in as a parallel and an autograph put in as a parallel. So they really just run these cards out, and then they have a certain number of them signed, certain of them cut up and made into jerseys. And it really doesn't make for that interesting of a set, although it makes it somewhat concise. If you're into the Masterstroke set, you can collect all the base parallels, all the autograph parallels, and all the jersey parallels. And one thing I forgot to mention, Studio is known for its proof cards, and throughout the set you'll find parallels of that and the Masterstroke sets out of 199. It looks like most of the insert cards are serial numbered out of 199, and I'm sure the autographs and jerseys have parallels associated with them as well. But back to what I was saying, I don't really like sets that just kind of parallel off the sets and don't really do a whole lot in terms of creating a whole set for an autograph, a whole set for the jerseys, and a whole set for just base cards and things like that. Go ahead and name them all different things and give collectors something a little bit more to shoot for. That's my only complaint maybe with a set like this. Team Studio is another insert. This is dual-sided cards, I believe, and it'll feature jersey cards of players like Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, Dirk Nowitzki, and Josh Howard, and many others. There's 15 cards in that set. Skyline autographs. These are definitely worth taking a look at. These appear to be in the pictures that I have. I don't have any confirmation from Panini or any official information, but these appear to be on card. And it's a nice looking set. Reminds me of some old studio designs or maybe some Skybox premium designs. I like these cards. There's some autograph parallels of Blake Griffin, Kobe's in there, Tracy McGrady, Kevin Love, Chris Bosh, Chauncey Billups. There's quite a few other players in there. It's a 30-card set, and some of them are autographs, so you take a look at those. Again, same thing. Autographs are $249 or less. There's also a jersey parallel here. I don't have any pictures of those, but you can also find the jersey parallel, and there's also proofs of those. And the base cards, it's a 100-card base set. And one thing Panini decided to mention in their sell sheet this year is they have printing plates in here. Now, I'm not privy enough to know that I don't believe Panini has put as many printing plates as most companies do. Most companies tend to, that's almost like a staple to a product, whereas Panini has held back those printing plates, but that's an option here. Obviously, there's four different levels, magenta, cyan, yellow, black, all numbered to one of one, all of the 100 base cards, so that's kind of nice. There's studio proofs, and in the base set, you have different levels. There's bronze out of 199, silver out of 99, gold out of 49, and platinum are numbered one of one. So I guess there's two versions of one of ones to collect. So if you miss out on any of the four printing plates, you can get the platinum proof one of one, and that might suitify your needs. So that about wraps it up for Panini Studio. Check it out on sportscardradio.com. You'll be able to find the full preview there with the full checklist of all the cards. So if you're interested in putting together a set or something like that, you might want to check that out. Again, a pretty exciting month in terms of product releases. In terms of our other shows, we're definitely going to be talking about Topps Pro Debut Baseball coming out next week, or not next week, I think in the middle of this month, and that's an interesting set. It'll be Topps first minor league baseball set where they utilize their minor league baseball license, so you'll see a lot of younger prospect cards and things like that. This is not for the veteran Manny Ramirez and Derek Jeter collectors and people like that. This is really for the prospectors. I have a preview of that. While you're checking out the studio preview, you can check out a preview of that. I have that up already. At the end of the month, Exquisite Football comes out. We have a whole section on Sports Card Radio there. We already have a lot of the 2009 coverage over there. Press Pass Football 2010, Tim Tebow, Colt McCoy, Sam Bradford, Jimmy Clausen, all kinds of guys, CJ Spiller. There'll be lots of nice hits in there. That's a 5 autograph per box product. Although, if you look at the draft, there's a lot of hype behind this draft. Lots of defensive players in there, and we have a preview of that as well on Sports Card Radio. You can take a look at that, get ahead on the episodes. And SB Authentic Hockey, we're definitely going to be talking about this. I think this is a nice product. There's some very nice patch autograph rookie cards in here that are very low serial numbers that I like quite a bit. So you want to check out that. We got a preview of that on Sports Card Radio. We just got you covered for this entire month of March here on the podcast and over on the website. Why don't you check it out over on this break? Another American Idol favorite from this last week for you here. Hope you enjoy it. After this short break, we'll be talking about Upper Deck, the settlement with the Major League Baseball. What happened? How Upper Deck got their hand slapped? And the entire rundown after this.
You only stay with me in the morning. You only hold me when I sleep. I was meant to tread the water, but now I've gotten in too deep. For every piece of me that wants you, another piece backs away.
Welcome back. Time to follow up on the story we talked about last week about Upper Deck and MLB going to court over basically 2010 Series 1 Upper Deck and a few other products that have come out since the Major League Baseball negotiated an exclusive deal with Topps. Here is a summary of what these two major franchises decided in court. Upper Deck will end up paying MLB properties more than $2.4 million, basically the entire amount of the dispute, for Upper Deck's 2009 debts. Upper Deck is going to pay MLB properties a substantial sum for unlicensed cards that it sold in 2010. The specific sum of the payment is confidential, although we did have some insight on how much money Upper Deck made from the three products that they put out, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Upper Deck has agreed not to issue any additional releases on infringing cards. Last year, it issued 15 baseball card releases, and there are currently only three infringing releases that are in distribution in 2010. Upper Deck also agreed it will not make any new sets of cards using MLB logos, uniforms, trade dress, or club color combinations. Upper Deck also agreed it will not airbrush, alter, Photoshop, or block MLB marks in future products. And finally, Upper Deck must receive approval from the MLB for the use of baseball jerseys, pants, jackets, caps, helmets, or catcher's equipment. I don't see umpires on here in future products featuring baseball players. So basically, they came to an agreement. Basically, we'll get to Upper Deck's side of the story in a little bit. And I find it, I have some points highlighted here that we'll get to. But this all revolves around three sets that came out earlier this year: 2009 Ultimate Collection Baseball, 2010 Signature Stars Baseball, and 2010 Upper Deck Series 1 Baseball, which Upper Deck claims is the majority of the revenue that we're talking about here. These sets combined for a total revenue of approximately $10 million. So in just a few months here in 2010, $10 million off three sets. That's quite a bit. Upper Deck also canceled SP Authentic, SPX Baseball 2010, any 2010 release that they had this year. I'm sure they will reorganize and try to maneuver in some way to make cards the rest of the year, but they did cancel any releases that you saw on our box break calendars, anything at Blowout or DA Card World or anything like that. All of that has been canceled. And if you had pre-orders or anything like that, you'll definitely be refunded or something will work out for you. In terms of Upper Deck's argument, if you go to sportscardreport.info, you'll be able to find the full 10-page PDF declaration of Upper Deck's director of sports brand, Jason Mashura. You'll be able to find his complete statement. And he was very candid and kind of opened the doors on some insight into the hobby world. And I wanted to highlight some of his points. If you're interested in reading the full document, again, it's a 10-page court document that we found, and it's over on sportscardreport.info. But I wanted to highlight Section 9. This comes from Jason Mashura of the UD's Director of Sports Brand. Section 9, the heaviest period of consumer purchase of newly released series is the time immediately following the series launch. The day and the day after the launch historically show the heaviest sales, and the sales slowly decline as the launch date recedes. A product usually lives or dies within the first 14 days of a release because products either from Upper Deck or from competitors such as Top come out so often, generally every other week. About 80% of all sports card products are purchased and open within the 60 days of the release. So there you go. You got it straight from Upper Deck Brands, 80% of all sports car products purchased are opened within 60 days of the release, and it's really those first 14 days where it kind of lives and dies, and if the SRP is going to hold or if they're going to have to do some reduction in price or kind of dumping to retail outlets and things like that. So very interesting. If you're kind of a box speculator, I know we talk a lot about prospect speculators, and that's one part of the hobby that gets touched on quite a bit, where you're picking individual players and hoping that they have a successful career. We know all about that, but box, unopened box prospecting is another thing that we have touched on the show before, and maybe we'll talk about it more in the future, because we have some insight on 80% of all sports card products are purchased and opened within 60 days of the release, straight from Upper Deck's mouth right there. So if you're a box prospector, you're looking at that 60-day mark. Once 2 months roll over, you can almost be assured that if it was a good product, if it was a somewhat successful product, and especially very successful product, you can guarantee something like an Allen and Ginter or Bowman Chrome, and even like Top Series 1 Baseball, Upper Deck Series 1 Baseball, 80% of it's gone and open. So unopened boxes are much more rare. Obviously, some products are hit and miss, but unopened box prospecting is one insight that I saw with that statement. Next, Section 23, this is read in part. Throughout history, and long before MLBP started leveraging trading card companies into licensing deals, baseball cards have borne players in uniform. In the modern market, there are no such things as baseball player series that does not feature photos of a player in their uniform. A series consistently solely of players not in uniforms would be, at best, a sporadic novelty, low revenue, excuse me, those are very jumbled words there. And so basically he was saying it was a low revenue item, and it wouldn't be something that they could feature like an Upper Deck Series 1 and make a lot of money, make $10 million on. This is about Upper Deck's ability to continue to produce player licensed baseball cards and to compete fairly in a market for such cards against MLB licensed cards. If we cannot use uniforms, we cannot compete, and most assuredly, there will be only one baseball trading card company, Topps, when the dust settles. That's a very interesting point, and his point after that in Section 24 kind of wraps up that argument that the Major League Baseball has engaged in a pattern of using legal actions to push non-license out of baseball trading card market. I am aware of past instances where Major League Baseball brought legal actions similar to this one against baseball trading card companies such as Pacific and Donruss, who actually were purchased by Panini, so they're still in business. He claims that those companies are no longer in business, but as far as I'm concerned, Pacific was the only one there that really did go out of business. I know Donruss had some financial troubles. Now, his points are very valid. The fact that it's almost unheard of to be able to put together a set, especially these sets like Top Series 1 and Upper Deck Series 1, the reason why they're so successful is because they're 500, 600 card base sets with thousands of other subsets and other cards, where they can push these out to a Walmart and a Target and make lots of money that way. And so I can see the argument there where it's very hard. It would be very hard for them to put together a set where they can't show uniforms. They can't get 500 just face shots of all the baseball players. The amount of money and time that would consume would not even be worth it. So it's very difficult. I can totally understand that argument. I understand their argument by saying if they cannot compete, at least on some level, at best, the low revenue, they can't compete on the low revenue items. So they have to be able to come out with baseball cards in some fashion. What the Major League Baseball don't want to happen is for a company like Upper Deck to go out of business. That would not only be tragic for the hobby as much as people, we're not meant to be hating on Upper Deck. I'm just announcing exactly what happened here. This is not meant to be hating on Upper Deck. I actually like Upper Deck, and it would be tragic if they win for some reason. We're not even speculating here, but if they were to go out of business or they could not compete at a high level, it would not be good for sports cards, would not be good for business, and it definitely wouldn't be good for baseball. And I don't know if the businessmen there, and I can imagine that they probably are savvy enough to realize that the Major League Baseball definitely does not want Upper Deck to go out of business, because we've touched on it on the last show. The whole reason why I believe that they want these exclusive deals in place is because of money. That's the only reason why these leagues exist, and that's usually the reason behind all their decisions, is normally money-based. And we've seen it with steroids, and we've seen it with, especially in baseball, all their decisions tend to be money-related. Now, if Upper Deck were to go out of business and all you had was Topps, how much is Topps really going to pay for an exclusive deal when there's really no other company to come in there and compete with them? Sure, Panini might dip into the baseball card market, considering they have a history with Donruss and things like that. We'll see. Or maybe another company could emerge. Maybe Upper Deck falls apart but kind of turns into a different entity, things like that. But MLB doesn't want that to happen. They want a healthy Upper Deck. So when this agreement runs out with Topps, they can straight come back and renew at a higher price, either with Topps, or maybe Upper Deck will come in there and outbid Topps, and therefore the MLB makes more money. They benefit. If there's only one TV station or only one network or only one competitor in the marketplace, exclusive deals pretty much go out the window, because you pretty much have to deal with that company or you're not going to put out any products. So these companies need to be, the leagues need to be careful of not eliminating the competition to a point where there's only one company or there's only one or two healthy companies, to where these exclusive deals don't end up having any merit because there's no competing business there. So we'll see what happens. In the end, if MLB holds a hard line and Upper Deck can only come out with like novelty, kind of like Donruss Elite, Extra Edition. I know Upper Deck still has some other deals with baseball, and so they'll still come out with baseball products in some fashion, but like they said, it might be a novelty, low revenue item, so it might not make them that much money. So we'll see what happens there, but that basically sums up Upper Deck's problems and Upper Deck's issues. We'll see what happens going forward, but like I said, they definitely don't want this company to go out of business. So anything they run by them, obviously in the future, has to be run by, any cards made by Upper Deck have to be run by Major League Baseball. So we'll see how Major League Baseball handles it. Maybe they'll let some things go. Maybe they'll it seems like it's all at their discretion at this point. So whatever they decide Upper Deck can do, that's basically what's going to happen. So it's all in the hands of Major League Baseball. If they hold a hard line and really don't let Upper Deck come out with a whole lot, then yes, Topps is definitely going to succeed. They have some great baseball products, and I think they really were deserving of the Major League Baseball contract. But it doesn't mean that you have to totally shut out Upper Deck. They've had some very nice sets in the past, and they've had a very rich history with cards going back to the Ken Griffey Jr. Upper Deck rookie, among other sets. So we'll see what happens. I know a lot of bloggers and other opinions I saw on there, their keyword was innovate, but Upper Deck has done a good job over the years, and these companies pretty much copycat each other. Whoever comes up with the idea, the other one's going to come in there and capitalize on it as well. So it's not just one company that has to innovate. It's not just on their shoulders. If Topps comes out with an idea, then I'm sure Upper Deck and Panini and all the rest are going to copy it. So we'll see what happens. But I think, like they said, it's very difficult to come out with a set that has very limited player runs and very limited ability to have multiple insert cards, because as Upper Deck said, Upper Deck Series 1 Baseball accounted for the majority of the $10 million that they made in the combined revenue of the three sets that they put out in 2010. So sets like that, big 500 card sets, are really where the money's at. So if Upper Deck has no ability to do that, it's really going to be stuck on that high end stuff. And Ultimate Collection and Signature Stars were middle of the road to somewhat high end products, and they were only accounted for maybe 25-30% of that $10 million. So you can do the math. So we'll see. And of that $10 million, some of that is going to MLB properties. How much, I don't know, but I can imagine it'll be a fairly large portion of it. That about wraps it up for Upper Deck's troubles. We'll see what happens going forward. We'll see if Upper Deck can compete. We'll see if football, the strength of this year's football in terms of quarterbacks and things like that, might be able to keep them going. Maybe they'll restructure some things and start doing some things a little bit differently. But we'll actually be talking a little bit about Upper Deck in our next segment, too. Next segment, we're going to be talking about the game used market, kind of in general, in terms of cards. And I'm going to throw in like full pieces. Ollie from Chicago, you know, said that was part of his collection, some Yankee stuff. He's really enjoyed collecting the full pieces, like hats and jerseys and bases and baseballs and all kinds of things like that. So we'll talk about that after this very short break. We'll be back after this.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong.
Back, time to talk about some game used memorabilia, not necessarily in cards, but also the full pieces. We'll talk about both. Let's talk about the full pieces. I wish I had the budget to afford some things, because you can definitely find some things out there. I know, just based on my own kind of searching, just kind of, you know, my own wishful thinking, I guess, so to speak. Steiner Sports, if you're a Yankees fan, they have, I believe they have some kind of arrangement with the New York Yankees where they get bases and spring training stuff and baseballs, and they have all kinds of like seats from the old stadium. I know they had trouble selling for a while, but they have all kinds of things, you know, kind of memorabilia just in terms of Yankee stuff. As Sports Collectors Digest, there's all kinds of ads. That's one of the best places to kind of just look for ads and things, just kind of look over sports card memorabilia and things like that, because I saw lots of like old jerseys. People had old jerseys, a lot of them in like kind of the $300-$400 range. Kind of seemed like if it was a vintage jersey, that was kind of the stock price. Look, sometimes you can get them for a little bit less, but obviously the superstar players, a full game worn jersey was, you know, upper three figures, four figures. So interesting stuff. The most recent news I saw about full game used pieces was Upper Deck. This was, I believe, on their Facebook, or maybe their Twitter, or maybe both. I'm not really sure. But they had pictures of Chris Paul autographing a jersey, shorts, and shoes, and you could purchase it as a complete set. So obviously it's going to run you some serious bank, because I think he signed both shoes, the jersey, and the shorts. So you're getting four autographs at least. And you bought it as the whole set. And so it was like the first time Upper Deck was offering full, complete uniform, game-worn uniform autograph memorabilia. So I thought that was really awesome. If you had a decent job, if you're rolling in the dough, that would just be perfect. You could have the whole get-up for a player. So you definitely want to check that out if you're into that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of other ways to buy game used memorabilia. One of the better ways is through auction. There's lots of charity auction, private auctions, and things like that. Not necessarily online in eBay and places like that. Sometimes you have to go to larger auction houses, charity auctions, silent auctions, things like that. Oftentimes you just have to be in the right place at the right time to pick up some of this game used memorabilia and things like that. So occasionally you'll see some things on eBay, but it's very difficult to authenticate it and things like that there, whereas on a charity auction and a large auction house and things like that, usually you have some kind of verification from the player. And things like that. And that reminds me, we did a show quite a ways back, I believe, where Brett Favre, I believe, signed off on some authentic game-worn jerseys, and I believe they turned out to not be game-worn. You'll have to go back. I don't quite remember the story. I don't remember if they were definitely not authentic or just suspected to be not game-worn. So even from a player, it's not always 100%. So, but there's lots of that stuff out there. Now, obviously, with the sports cards, they've been cutting this up since the late 90s, and I think it's pretty cool. Maybe my only reservations will be for things like presidents and icons, not necessarily sports people, despite people like putting Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle and guys like that on a huge pedestal. These guys really only played baseball, and I'm sure if you knew a man-to-man, they were just baseball players, and they were just a regular guy that played baseball exceptionally well back in those days. A president, yeah, you can say that, hey, this guy is just a guy that got elected to office, but there's only been 50-some-odd presidents in our history and through other countries. Not necessarily, we're talking about a much smaller group, much different segment of history. I don't mind JFK cut-up sweaters. I think that's fine. Or like hair pieces of presidents, which we've seen DNA cuts and things like that. I guess I'm okay with it, but I guess it's a little bit different. I really don't mind if somebody buys a Babe Ruth game-used 1930 whatever game-used jersey and Topps wants to cut it up and put it in a set. I guess I'm fairly okay with that. I don't find any problems with that because this guy was a baseball player. And the company that wants to pay, or the individual that wants to pay the most money for that, is free to do whatever they wish. It's definitely gotten a lot better in terms of cards. The things I wish maybe they would do more, and I guess this goes along with innovating, is I'd like to see more full patches. I'd like to see where it was actually game-worn. We see a lot of this Letterman stuff that's manufactured, and most of the rookies, it's player worn, where they're putting on, I don't know, hundreds of jerseys maybe at the player shoot and things like that. But I'd like to see more game worn stuff like that. I know it's more profitable and things like that to cut that three or four ways, but it's nice to have a little one of one Letterman patch and maybe have the whole nameplate run through a series. So if you have Favre spelled out, and a Brett Favre really wants that set, and really wants, kind of the complete one-of-one set of his name spelled out, it would be pretty cool to have that in a set, or kind of have that guaranteed throughout an entire product run. I think that would get people excited. Adding to that, if you had the player actually sign those patches on patch, I really like the look of that. I think instead of a sticker autograph, and maybe even a step above an on-card autograph, is an on-patch game-worn jersey autograph. I think those are great cards, and I really like that. I think that can be used more effectively and more often. I think collectors really like those kind of cards, and I think it looks great as long as the pen they use is good and the player signs it in the right spot. That reminds me, I remember in 2006, Reggie Bush, that was kind of one of the first years they had a lot of this Letterman stuff autographed. And Reggie Bush signed a few of his, I think it was Throwback Threads or something like that. He signed like some of them in like two spots. So you see some players do some weird things on that, and I think it leads to some interesting cards. So I'd like to see more game-worn cuts of that. I like I said, I don't necessarily have a problem with like presidents and like heroes and things like that. It definitely adds to these sets, especially in baseball. Sometimes that's the highlight of the whole set, is those kind of hits, and I love those kind of things. And as long as the companies are willing to spend the kind of money that it requires to obtain those kind of pieces, I say go for it. But as a collector, it makes for a great investment. It's a great purchase. If you can purchase that entire jersey or get his helmet somehow or get his pair of shoes that he worn, that's excellent. Whether or not you want to sell that in the future or just have it kind of as a centerpiece of your collection, it's definitely a great way to go. And my opinion is, if you're tired of cards, maybe tired's kind of a strong word, but maybe if you're getting frustrated with your collection or you don't know where to go, maybe you're not sure what sets to collect or what players to collect, maybe it's time to take some of those players that you have spent time collecting cards of, and maybe you've run out of cards to collect, or maybe you've kind of spent as much as you want to on his cards. Look around, do some hunting and try to find some game used memorabilia and some full pieces of his stuff, because that's a pretty nice piece to your collection too, and I think you would value those as much as an exquisite rookie or a playoff National Treasures rookie or some kind of special on-card autograph and things like that. I think those make for nice cards. So I think they're nice purchases. I think it's great that the market's out there. I think it would be better if it was more transparent, if it was there was more transparency in terms of what was game worn, when was it game worn, how do I certify that, and things like that. So maybe going forward, we'll see players take advantage of these uniforms. I can imagine, especially teams with large budgets that don't give a crap about money, really, the players could probably have as many jerseys as they want. And they probably are free to do whatever they want with those jerseys. So if they want to give them to an auction or sell it for their own personal use, I'm sure they're free to do that. So as players become more aware and as the dollars become bigger, maybe you'll see more of these pieces come out there, because players can change uniforms. Baseball players especially can probably put on a new uniform every half inning if they wanted to. And I remember hearing stories back when Vince Carter signed with Fleer after his dunk contest foray. I don't know this for a fact, but I believe I remember reading that he was changing jerseys at halftime. He was putting on as many jerseys as he could, because and that's why you saw a huge influx in Vince Carter memorabilia, and you still see some of it probably trickling out of Panini's vault as we speak. So, you know, I love the game used market. It's obviously not for everybody. Not everything's affordable, although some game used stuff is. If you're just looking for a generic baseball, that's definitely worth it. I remember back in the day, I don't think you can do it anymore, but I believe my brother bought something off the Giants website one time. It was actually a lineup card. He bought a lineup card from a Giants game that was actually used in the dugout, and it had the pitchers' names and like how they were taken out and scratched off, and Barry Bonds' name was on there, and the manager, I think it was Dusty Baker, signed it and everything. And I think he purchased it for maybe like $10 or $12, and pretty much every game was on there unless it was like a significant game. So I don't know if those things are still available. I haven't looked into it myself, but you'll want to check out your team's website and maybe go to Major League Baseball. I know they run auctions and things like that on their website to benefit charities and things like that. So that's where the majority of the money, if it's directly from a league and typically from a player, it goes to a charity. So it's going to a good cause too. So you can feel good about, for the most part, buying this stuff. So unless you're buying it on the secondary market, but like we said, the secondary market's tough for this stuff. You've got to look on, I believe if you've never checked, if you're into game worn stuff, Sports Collectors Digest has a lot of advertisers that specialize in this that are big enough sports. If you're advertising in a magazine like that, especially on a regular basis, chances are you have the capital and the supply to warrant advertising regularly like that. So those are worth checking out. That's the only place that I've seen very special and large selections of that. That's probably a good resource to find some websites and just try to surf around and find as many things as you can. As far as game used memorabilia goes, well, that about wraps it up for this segment. We'll come back real quickly here after the break just to wrap it up, maybe talk about a little bit of sports stuff, what's been going on. I don't know. I haven't been watching. I saw the Lakers lose to the Bobcats, I believe, tonight. So that's all that I have on my mind. We'll maybe talk a little bit. I don't know. We'll see what comes up after this break. We'll enjoy this music. We'll be back to wrap things up after this.
Summer came like cinnamon, so sweet. Little girls double dutch on the concrete. Maybe sometimes we got it wrong, but it's alright. The more things seem to change. Hesitate.
And we are back. Time to wrap things up. I was thinking just now, March is kind of one of those months that, especially right in the beginning of the month, March does heat up here, and we'll talk about that in a second. But March is one of those months where you're just kind of waiting. If you're a basketball fan, it's kind of, you're waiting for the playoffs to start, because the playoff picture is, if your team's bad, the NBA is structured in a way where if you're bad, you're not going to make a miracle comeback. It happens in football and baseball every season, basically, but it doesn't happen in basketball. So that's shaken out. You're waiting for basketball playoffs to start. If you're a baseball fan, you've got trickles of, if you're a diehard fan, you got the radio on and you're listening to spring training. But in the meantime, you're just waiting for the season to start, and it really just probably just makes it worse listening to the spring training, especially if you're a Giants fan, because they happen to be winning, it looks like to me. So we'll see what happens. And if you're a football fan, you're really just waiting for the NFL draft to happen, although we've had some free agency and things like that. But I believe the draft is late next month, in prime time on the NFL Network. You'd think I get paid by them, but I watch enough of them online that I'll shout them out here. But NFL draft is coming up. That's exciting. In sports cards, you're kind of waiting, too. Like I said, really to end of this month, we wrap up 2009 football with exquisite. Hockey has some really nice stuff at the end of the month. Baseball kind of starts to gear up here. We've got Pro Debut. Finest comes out a little bit later. So some nice stuff on the horizon. But in terms of baseball, we'll see what happens. We talked about it on the last show. You've got spring training. You want to keep an eye on injuries. You want to keep an eye on call-ups and guys that got those special call-ups. More than likely, a lot of those guys are not going to make the major league team. Especially if a team that has money and has spent money in free agency or has some returning veterans, there's really not going to be a whole lot of spots on a roster. But some of the mid-market teams, some of the lower-end teams, definitely have some rooms on their roster for anybody that's playing well enough to play in the major leagues. So you want to keep an eye on that. Any of your prospects cards, you want to dust off that baseball box, get your prospects cards out. I encourage you to do that early, because sometimes the best time to sell, if you're looking to sell, obviously if you're looking to just hold until they become a megastar and they're on TV and everybody knows their name. But if you're looking for just kind of a lukewarm sell, sometimes before the season starts, everybody's anticipation is so great, and we still haven't had a whole lot of great 2010 baseball sets. I shouldn't say we haven't had a lot of great sets, so we haven't had a whole lot of volume yet. So there's not a lot of 2010 to go around, so people are paying attention to what's going on to some of these rookies in spring training. So that's something to keep an eye on. It's sometimes that early hype is sometimes great. Even if the guy makes the team, if he comes out and slumps or if he doesn't make the team, people take that as maybe a bad sign or a negative sign. That they got invited to spring training and they end up in AAA, which was possibly and more than likely the plan all along, but collectors might not read into that, and so you might not see his cards bump after that. So despite maybe doing well in the minor leagues, but take advantage of the early season stats and things like that and some information that you can get if you're looking to move cards. In terms of football, like we said, it's all about the NFL draft, although we had free agency, I think, open up today. I believe there was some move. Anquan Boldin, I believe, got traded to the Baltimore Ravens. And it looks like the Chicago Bears made quite a few signings, most notably Julius Peppers. So again, real difficult. I can't say that I'm really knowledgeable about it, but this is a difficult time for the NFL because next year, I believe, is an uncapped year because they have no agreement and things like that. So all that, I'm sure, is going to be shaken out with the lawyers and all the heads of the Players Association and the owners and things like that. So they'll talk all that out, and I'm sure the NFL, if they know what's good for them, they're not going to they're not going to go to a strike and not have players playing football in the NFL after 2010. So we'll see what happens, but lots of teams making moves because there's uncapped years. You can cut players and not have penalties. So you'll see quite a bit of moves by NFL teams as we go forward. And as the NFL draft approaches, we'll have all the rookies making their official workouts. All the top name guys will go to their colleges or their place of workout and do little private workouts for scouts and things like that and do little interviews. So you'll hear more about 40 times and how well a guy or how bad a guy performed during their private workouts at the colleges and things like that. So that's pretty cool. And is obviously with basketball, you're just waiting for the NBA playoffs to start basically. Now with March, really the only highlight is March Madness college basketball. And really, can't say that I'm very knowledgeable about college basketball. All I know about it is that the tournament is in March and you fill out a bracket, and I usually don't know half the teams, and I haven't seen too much college action, so couldn't tell you exactly who's doing well, but it's always fun to just watch the action. That's when you really find out who these, especially a guy like me that doesn't catch a lot of college basketball, I find out who all these players are and all these teams. You get to see them kind of once a year. You get to see some of the underdog teams make a run. So that's exciting. Again, March is kind of that waiting year, that waiting time of year. Even as a golf fan, I'm waiting for the Masters. I'm waiting for Tiger Woods to come back. Always got to slip Tiger Woods in here. I'm really waiting for him to come back and play golf. Looks like he's taking the steps back. The Tiger Woods situation is a fluent one. However, the latest news I can give you is I believe he's back to working out. And it looks like he's living with his wife. The rumors or reports that I heard is they're living together, but it's not necessarily friendly, although none of us are there. None of us are inside there. So I just hope that they're working things out for the sake of their children, their families. Tiger hopefully is hitting golf balls. I heard that he was getting back to some practicing and things like that. So I can't imagine, just like Jack Nicklaus said, he said it himself, I think I said it on the show too, that he would totally surprise him if Tiger Woods missed the Masters. And it would really surprise me too. And I think I heard a journalist say, actually on TV somewhere, where he made a note where he said the Masters is the perfect place for Tiger Woods to come back, because if you don't know a lot about golf and if you don't know a lot about the Masters is a very exclusive club. It's very, even people like Bill Gates have trouble getting a membership there. So you can see how exclusive it is. It's very difficult to get tickets. It's just a very private club. And another thing they do is they don't hand out media credentials to just anybody. And if Tiger Woods was there, whatever Tiger Woods wanted to say, somebody not to be there, I'm sure the Masters would accommodate him. There's a champions locker room at the Masters where only champions and staff, obviously, that have to go in there and tend to the players and make sure the lockers are clean and set up and vacuum and things like that. Only staff and champions of the Masters tournament can go in there. So no reporters and no people hanging out in there other than Vijay Singh and players like that. So, you know, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, I guess, can talk about marriage and things like that in there. But no reporters. So the Masters is the perfect place for Tiger Woods to come back, because the Masters will do a great job at sheltering him and do a great job at doing the best job at hiding Tiger's whereabouts. It's probably one of the few tournaments where Tiger wouldn't have to go through a formal press conference. If he didn't want to, I'm sure he'd have to get in front of the media, but the Masters would accommodate Tiger however he wanted to, and they would understand his situation. But maybe knowing Tiger and knowing as much love as he has for the game, might not want to come back for the Masters, put that burden on the Masters, which is such a prestigious tournament and has done so much for his career and the money in his bank account. So he might not want to put that burden on the Masters. And I think it would be a great gesture by Tiger Woods. If he wants to get back in the good graces, like he says with everybody, I think it would be a great gesture to come back to golf at some point here between now and the Masters tournament, so you don't put that pressure on the staff there and that tournament, and don't let that be the story, because that course is so beautiful and that tournament is so rich with history that the attention really should be there. I know the attention won't be, but hopefully if it's his not his first tournament back, the attention will be somewhat on golf. Well, that about wraps it up for today. Not much else going on. Support Sports Card Radio. Head on. Oh, the best way, obviously, if you've listened to the show and you've hung with us for an hour, you're a loyal fan, and I appreciate it, and I really can't ask for much more than that, but I get emails and inquiries on ways they can help us in any way that they can. Just listening, like I said, and subscribing on iTunes and things like that, and finding us wherever you listen to us, is a great way to support the show. Visiting our website, sportscardradio.com, is another excellent way to support the show. At the bottom of pretty much every page on that website, you can share. If you find an article that you like, or if you find something that's particularly helpful on sportscardradio.com, you can share it on Facebook, Twitter. One of the best is actually Dig. It's pretty easy. If you've never used Dig, it's pretty easy to sign up. Just digging our content and just sharing it. If you have a Twitter or Facebook, anything you find useful, just doing stuff like that, taking a minute out of your day, definitely helps the site, definitely helps the podcast, and we'll definitely keep these rolling. Like I said, we got tons of great products to come out in the end of this month, so you got that to look forward to. We'll definitely have some more news on this Upper Deck situation and what's going on there. We'll see how it affects their product. Like I said, end of this month, Upper Deck Exquisite Football, Press Pass, 2010 football, Tim Tebow autographs are going to be in there. SB Authentic Hockey, I don't know if it's for sure, but I have it on my box release calendar. I'm going to go and confirm it here at some point. Topps Finest Baseball is on the horizon. There's lots of good stuff, so we've got a lot to talk about. We'll talk about all that and lots more. So send us an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. head on over to the fan forum, our blog. Anything you want to do to help us out, we much appreciate it. That about wraps it up. We're out of here.